Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm your host for today. Today, I am joined on the phone by a new author to the publishing scene, Mark Elswick. Immediately after a 1992 automobile accident, doctors told Mark's parents that he wouldn't make it through the day. A week later, Mr. and Mrs. Elswick were told that he would live life as a vegetable if he ever regained consciousness. However, nearly two decades later, he's amazingly showing virtually no signs outside of a slight speech impediment of the accident that left him on life support for over a week and a month-long coma. His book, Padman, A Dad's Guide to Buying Those and Other Tales, is a memoir where he journeys through life, love, and parenting. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Irene. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad to be talking to you. I think before we go any further, Mark, we're going to be talking about TBI, traumatic brain injury, and this is, of course, something that happened to you. And for our listening audience, would you explain what TBI really is?
Yeah, traumatic brain injury is, it could be a blow to the head, or it could be a closed head injury or an open head injury, open wound. And the brain is, it's very mysterious, and there can be a lot of consequences when the control center of your entire body is damaged, such as it can impair the way you speak, the way you think, the way you talk, the way you walk. It controls everything you ever do.
Mark, obviously you're a miracle, and your parents were warned that you weren't going to either live, or if you were, you were going to be vegetable. But lo and behold, here we are talking to you 20 years later. And so what was the miracle that happened?
Yeah, it was a lot of love, a lot of prayers from family and friends that pulled me through. I have no doubt, because there is no reason why I'm doing as well as I am. I've met quite a few traumatic brain injury survivors since then, and I am so lucky. BrainInjury.com reported that 9 out of 10 traumatic brain injury victims who are comatose for 30 days or more fail to progress beyond a severe state of disability. So I'm the 10%.
Wow. I just got goosebumps when you were telling me that. Now, Mark, you were in a coma for a month. Looking back, when you were during that time, were you conscious at all or aware? I guess the word would be aware that there were people around you or that actually you did have a life.
No, I do not remember any of that. I don't remember the accident. I don't remember people seeing me. I don't remember anything. The funny thing, it's not funny, but my parents made a video. They do prayer and love and all. They knew I was going to make it out of it. They refused to believe that I was going to die or be a vegetable. And they shot a video, it's maybe 1 minute long, of me in the hospital bed. And during the video, I guess I'd done it a couple times, I sat up. I was in a coma, couldn't talk, didn't move, but I sat up. My guess is I was in so much pain, I just wanted out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Wow. It's interesting to watch it. I'm sure for the first time, it's like, wow, did I do that? So,
yep.
Mark, let's talk about the moment that you came out of your coma and go back to that time. And what happened? I mean, all of a sudden you opened your eyes and you're aware. Let's talk about that moment.
I don't remember actually waking up and coming out of the coma, but my first memory was food, of all things. My father and a few other people were there, and they had donuts, and I couldn't talk. I was just, like that, mumbling, and I motioned that I wanted the donut in my mouth. I wanted the donut. And so my dad was eating a nutty donut, and he broke off half of it, and he gave it to me. Well, I put it in my mouth and took a bite and swallowed a nutty donut. So I'm gagging and coughing, and everybody's hitting me on the back and doing chewing 101, telling me I have to chew. And so that's one of the really, really, really simple things you take for granted, but that's something that the brain had to relearn.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about that experience and that you had to relearn to chew. Did you find that once you started coming out of that comatose and back into a life, that a lot of the memories did come back and you remembered how to chew or how to talk? Or let's talk about that.
Yeah, I think eventually they all came back to just doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They came back. I had learned, like I said, I learned to chew, learned to talk, a lot of speech therapy for about 3 years, and chew, talk, walk, physical therapy quite a bit. I basically was an outpatient, and I was in the hospital for roughly 6 months, and then I was moved to outpatient therapy, and there I underwent a lot of physical therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy, social group therapy, whatever there was, I was in it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you remember friends, family? Did all that memory come back to you?
Yeah, for the most part. I didn't wake up, like in the motion moving, not know who anyone was.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up and I knew who everyone was. I think my family, friends, everybody was worried that something like that would happen. I would wake up and not remember any of them. But I did remember them, and I couldn't actually tell you if I remembered right away or if maybe it took a couple of days because I couldn't talk, and so I didn't talk to anyone really. I'm sure it probably wasn't immediate, but it all came back.
So here we are today, 20 years ago, you had an accident, you went into a coma, and the prognosis to your parents was that you weren't, you're not going to live the life that you have now. And so when you sort of sit back and contemplate all that and the progression that's happened in the last 20 years, what feelings do you have?
The feelings I have were as far back as I can remember. When I woke up, I wanted out of there. I couldn't get back to normalcy sitting in a hospital bed. I remember this is one of the very few things I remember from waking up. A friend of mine, Ken Bales, he'd come and see me a few times, and he had a truck. I remember that. And I remember telling him, and I thought he was serious at the time. I'll never forget this, but I told him a few times, whenever he'd come, hey, sneak me out of here. Put me in the back of your truck. Wheel me down in the back of your truck and take me home. I don't even know if he'd remember that, but that's something I'll never forget. Mm-hmm. And I was really thinking he was going to help me get out of there, help me escape.
That's funny. I do know some other people that do have TBI, and they sometimes go into modes of reflecting back over, the last few years and the progression that they have had. And I was just wondering if you ever sit down and just sort of, reflect back, like, wow, 5 years ago I was in this place, but now 5 years later I'm so much better, because I'm sure that over the last 20 years there's just been a lot of progression. And I'm wondering if that, that happens to you sometimes.
Yeah, I understand, but mm-hmm. I've never really looked back and thought, I've done this, I've done that. There's a lot that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not worried about what I've done, because there's so much I need to do. I put off going the author route for a long time because I honestly, my short-term memory is pretty horrible. If I don't write it down, I keep a daily planner, but if I don't record it somewhere, I'll completely forget. And so I did that, and I don't look back, because the author route, I wanted to make sure I was 100%, my 100% was good enough to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm doing it. And fortunately, I've signed with a publisher, and now I'm trying to give back 10 to 20%, 15% of this book will go to the Brain Injury Association of America. And there's a donation page in the book, Padman. But I want to give back, because I've seen, I am so lucky compared to so many people that I've seen after a severe traumatic brain injury. And frankly, I've told people this for a while, for a long time. I'm not doing anything with my fortune. I've been so lucky and blessed I'm not doing anything with it. I have to give back.
It's wonderful. That's great, Mark. And I just really commend you for doing that. Mark, the TBI seems to be a national problem. And I'd like you to just address that issue.
Sadly, it really is a national problem. You know, according to the Brain Injury Association of America and the Center for Disease Control, 3.1 million children and adults live with lifelong disability as a result of a TBI. Wow. On the average, that's a big number, wow. On the average, and each year, 1.7 million people will sustain a traumatic brain injury. Of those, 80% are treated and released from the hospital. Nearly 300,000 of those are hospitalized, and unfortunately, 52,000 will die. Many concussions, which are mild form of TBI, go unreported and untreated, but the numbers are staggering. With the United States military returning home soon, hopefully, those numbers are going to explode. TBI injury is like most things. People don't really think about it much until it hits home. Well, with the problem growing, the military about to bring the war home, well, it's about to hit home.
Wow, that, again, I got goosebumps just listening to you and those numbers. And the military, wow. And so is this, you're talking about the military members having TBI, and is that because of injuries?
Yeah, mostly it could be from roadside bombs, IEDs. Especially, I was reading about a gentleman in the Army, and he has had, I believe it was 8 concussions, and he was saying that it's the invisible injury. People can't see it. People think there's something wrong with him or her, but he was saying before he went in there, he had just graduated from vocational school. He could build a house full of furniture in a week from scratch. And now it takes him 30 days to build a birdhouse for his son. That's what it's all about. People don't understand traumatic brain injury. For instance, if you see me, talk to me, pretty much all you're going to see is a slight speech impediment, as you can hear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it sounds like. But you would never guess. I was in a hospital in a coma for a month and on life support for some of that time. It's the unseen injury. People think, oh, he's fine, she's fine, she can do whatever. But that's not what it's about. It's the center control nerve of your entire body. If little things you take for granted, such as picking up occupational therapy, that's something I had to do a lot. I still struggle with small things. So picking up a screw and a bolt and screw and putting them together, that's tough because your brain does not allow you to do things so easily. Not sure if that makes sense, but
yeah, it makes a lot of sense, Mark. I'm sitting here and just listening to you, and just sort of like, wow, a person like myself, because I do not have VTI, doesn't even think about things like that. You know, that little things like you're talking about picking up a screw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an issue for you, and it's that added effort. And, we go on with our lives without even giving that any consideration until we see somebody like you or talk to somebody like you. Okay, Mark.
If I could say one more thing.
Yes, of course.
Something else that everybody knows how to do and everybody thinks is done to it, hammering a nail. Say you're hanging up a picture or building something, women and guys.
Uh-huh.
So I guess you could look at that. All right, yeah. I will not try to hammer a nail anymore because my thumbs have been smashed so many times because my hand-eye coordination is non-existent. You wouldn't think of it. You can't see that. Nobody can see that.
Yeah.
But
because
there, I have no hand-eye coordination. If I do ever, when I would hammer a nail, if I ever had to, I would hold the hammer up right by the top, not by the handle, but up by the top, and tap the nail in. I don't care if it took me 400 times.
Huh.
I wouldn't reach back, wham, because guaranteed I'm going to drill my thumb.
Well, I tell you, I don't have ETI, and I have to do it like you. So, Mark, do you laugh at yourself when you do things like that?
Well, after I cry, yeah. No, a TBI, though, it's, I know my condition. I know how lucky I am, I guess, whenever I do anything such as that. Uh-huh. It's, look, you know, I did this, but look how fortunate I am. How many people can't do anything for themselves because of their TBI?
That's so true. That's so true.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Mark Elswick, author of Padman, A Dad's Guide to Buying, Those and Other Tales. As you've heard so far, Mark is a medical miracle, and he's talking to us about all the experiences with TBI, traumatic brain injury. So I really encourage you to stay tuned and listen for more, because there's just so much more. And by the way, I encourage you also to check out his website, markelswick.com, to learn a little bit more about him. Mark, let's talk about your book, Padman,
uh-huh.
Dad's Guide to Buying Those, and Other Tales. So how did this all start?
Well, you can see writing's in my blood. It's something I've always been pretty passionate about, Irene.
Uh-huh.
I've written for several newspapers, online sites, magazines. I was a sports writer and even a sports editor. Being a full-fledged author, though, is something I, like I said, is something I wanted to do for a long time. Now, finally, I feel my 100% is good enough to pursue that. So I've accumulated some stories through the years, and Padman is actually one of them. My daughter is now 18, and I wrote that when she was 12, and I saved it, and I still remember she read it, and she laughed a lot, and I thought, wow, it must be pretty good. My daughter laughs at her nerdy dad doing something, then it's got to be all right. So basically, that's when it started, and I accumulated things here and there, and I wanted to do something for traumatic brain injury, so I thought, hey, if I put things into a book, a collection, and I gave it the same title, and other tales, then maybe I can raise more money for brain injury and start my career as an author, and I've done that, and basically the reviews are showing it's a pretty funny book, and it's going to make a lot of money for brain injury. And it's leading into my next book, March of 2012, will be Traumatic Brain Injury, Milestones and Recovery. I'm looking forward to that. I'm working on that right now. And I'm not sure, when did it all start? I'd say probably 6 years ago that started, but I've always been into writing. And thank God, medical miracles, whatever. My writing ability was not touched. That I can think about that, and it makes perfect sense to me, but I'm sure a lot of people it doesn't make sense to. My writing ability, maybe that portion of my brain, education, my writing ability, maybe that wasn't touched. A lot of other things were, but that was not affected.
So there's humor, in this book. How about just relating to maybe one of the stories that you have in there? That's humorous, so we can sort of entice the listening audience to know what this book is all about. And so how about just kind of reflecting briefly one of the stories?
All right. 90% of the book is true. It's, like I said, stories from my past and about raising a daughter. And a story, how about newborn to dad, no multitasking. That's 100% true. My daughter's first night home from the hospital, where she was on the couch, and women can multitask. You women can do your hair, cook something in the oven, put on makeup, watch two kids, monitor the computer that your teenager's on. You can do all that at once.
Yeah, of course.
But a guy can't do that.
Oh.
Guys do one thing. They usually do it well, like they work, but don't have to do much more. Well, I was watching a basketball game. It was, It wasn't long. It was 7 months after I was out of the hospital, I think. And my daughter, it was her first night home, and her mom said she had to go to the restroom. So she got up and went, and I was supposed to change Gabrielle, my daughter. And so, of course, me being a guy, I'm watching the game and changing because I can multitask. And so something big was going on in the game, so I got my hand on her stomach, which, you know, pretty much covers the whole body, and holding her, makes her don't fall. She's secure in a guy's eyes. And I'm watching the game on TV, looking at this, and then all of a sudden, I don't want to give it all away because it's pretty funny, but all of a sudden I felt something hot and wet on my leg. And I looked over my shoulder, and she was peeing the jet stream, and I screamed, "Jerry, Jerry!" I screamed because I didn't think girls could do that. And it scared me. And so I just got laughed at forever about it, but that was scary.
That's so funny. That's great. So there you go, listeners. There's more like that, that is for sure. So, Mark, I wanted to talk to you just about one thing that you had mentioned. So you were obviously, when this accident happened, you had a wife and a daughter at that time.
We were engaged.
You were engaged.
We weren't married.
Okay. But you had a daughter.
Yes.
And so when you came out of the coma and back into life then, you know, you're telling me that you were looking after this child. So what was that like going into all of a sudden to be a father after just coming out of, you know, the situation you were in?
Yeah. Well, she was 6 months pregnant at the time, so thankfully nothing happened to her. But it's hard to explain. Like I said, once I got out, I guess the good Lord, medical miracles, it kept my focus, drive, and which I honestly feel that's mostly what I learned growing up, where I grew up. It kept the drive, and I never thought about looking back. I wanted to move forward because I was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to be fine. I had to do this. I'm not really sure how to answer you, Irene. I'm sorry, but...
No, that's good. That's good. Well, you know, I just have to commend you because as I'm reflecting, there you are, coming out of the hospital, different than what you were before. All of a sudden, you having a child, you know, there's this responsibility. You're still trying to deal with the recovery of your accident and, you know, getting your brain to get back into some type of order. And all of a sudden, there's this child, and you are looking after the child, and all of a sudden, you have to change diapers and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, wow, that's big. That's big, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, gosh, listeners, this has been an interesting conversation, hasn't it? I'm really thrilled to be talking to Mark and just seeing that actually there are medical miracles, and especially the fact that he wasn't given any opportunity at the beginning that of a life. You know, it's either he wasn't going to make the day or else he just was going to be a vegetable, but here he is almost 20 years later, and we're talking with him, and he's writing, and he's laughing, and, you know, just living a normal life. So I just really encourage you listeners to check out Mark Elswick's book. It's called Padman, A Dad's Guide to Buying, ... Those and Other Tales. And I can just imagine what those, the guide to buying, ... those is, but I'm just going to leave it there. And just encourage the listeners to find out. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Every guy's fear.
Yeah.
Every guy's fear.
Every guy's fear.
It's been my pleasure, Irene. Thank you very much.
So tell us, before we sign off, tell our listening audience your website address.
All right, my website is www.markelswick.com, MarkElswick, and also I would encourage you, if you live in Facebook land, add author Mark Elswick. Please add me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you, talking to you. Please add me.
All right. There you go, listeners. It's markelswick.com, or on Facebook it's at author Mark Elswick, and I'm on his friends list, so I'm honored.
Yep, you are.
Thanks again, Mark. And there you go, listeners. Again, I just really encourage you to check out Mark's book, Padman, The Dad's Guide to Buying, and Those and Other Tales. And as you've heard so far, this has been a really interesting conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is Irene Watson for Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.